This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're staying on the planet Earth's surface at Boca Chica. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black, and Boca Chica, famous for Starship, famous for SpaceX, now famous for the piping plover. That's right, the piping plover. Bob is going to introduce us to why, but I mention, according to Wiki, the piping plover is a small, sand-colored, sparrow-sized shorebird that nests and feeds along coastal sand and gravel beaches in North America. For example, Boca Chica, Texas. Bob, a very good evening to you. Why is the piping plover suddenly in space news?
Well, John, Fish and Wildlife is one of the departments that have to sign off on the environmental reassessment the FAA has written to allow Starship Super Heavy launches from their Boca Chica location in the southern tip of Texas. And Fish and Wildlife has not signed off on that approval of the environmental reassessment. And the reason we now have discovered why is CNBC obtained Freedom of Information documents from Fish and Wildlife. And those documents reveal the reason they have not approved is because they have noticed a correlation between SpaceX's activities at Boca Chica and a population decline of the piping plover at Boca Chica. Now, first rule of science is that correlation doesn't prove causation. In other words, just because there happens to have been a decline does not in any way prove that SpaceX activities have done this. This so-called endangered species happens to also be found on coastal city places all across the country, and the Fish and Wildlife and federal government has used its existence everywhere as a ploy to shut down operations in other beaches elsewhere in the country. And so these documents reveal, what they're really revealing is that Fish and Wildlife, run by now the Biden administration, is searching desperately for any excuse it can come up with for limiting or preventing SpaceX from operating. And this is what they've come up with, the piping plover. And it's pretty bogus, and it doesn't make any sense. But it does give them the power to delay the launch, and it's very clearly what now the motive's going on here. It's pretty clear that they're looking for anything they can find to delay the launch of Starship, and if possible, even prevent it. Some of this is, I think, directly linked with the growing hostility on the left to Elon Musk himself.
Musk is certainly the tall sunflower. Let's go to more commercial space, because the piping plover mystery will continue. Phantom Space, what is that, Bob?
A few weeks ago, I took a tour of Phantom Space, given to me by Jim Cantrell, the CEO and founder. It's located in Tucson. If you might remember, Jim Cantrell had been the CEO and co-founder of an earlier rocket startup company called Vector that has since gone bankrupt. And for a lot of different reasons, mostly having to do with the engine, rocket engine they were trying to build for this small sat rocket company, was underpowered. They were trying to build their own rockets, and it didn't work. And so they went bankrupt. They lost investors, and they couldn't finish the rocket, and it went out of business. But Jim Cantrell doesn't take no for an answer, and so he formed a new company, Phantom Space. He gave me a tour. I've got a picture on Behind the Black with this post of the Hadley engine that they're going to use in their new Daytona rocket for Phantom Space. And what Phantom Space is doing, different than what Cantrell's earlier company did, is they're not building the engine themselves. They've decided to purchase the engine from another company which is specializing in building rocket engines. This is a rocket engine startup company called Ursa Major. They've developed a Hadley engine, and they're also developing a larger engine they call Ripley. And their goal is to develop engines for rocket companies. You know, take the burden of developing an engine out of the rocket company's hands. Let the rocket company deal with launches and building the stages around it and getting customers payloads. They'll provide the engines, which is a complicated thing.
Is that the engine, Bob, sitting there on the desk?
That's the engine. If you're looking, it's sitting on a desk. It's sitting on a desk. It's not a big engine. This is their smallest version engine. They're going to put like 7 or 9 of these at the base of the Daytona rocket to launch it. The news today is that Phantom Space has now ordered more than 200 rocket engines from Ursa Major. In other words, they did some testing over the last few weeks of that engine, and they have now decided that they want more of them. And not only do they want more of the Hadley engine, they also want the larger Ripley engine. The numbers are not specified in the announcement, but what's going to happen is they're going to put these engines on Daytona, and as they upgrade the Daytona rocket, they will move to using Ripley engines instead of Hadleys because they're more powerful. This is a big deal because it means that the company not only has the investment capital to pay for the engines, but it means they trust the engines to work and provide them the power they need, which means they can proceed to build. And so they hope to do their first launch within 3 years. Hoping to do their first launch next year, just 3 years after they formed Phantom Space. And this means this company could come out of the, like a dark horse, come out of nowhere to actually join the other startups that have begun to be operational very quickly. And so that's the story, John.
Axiom. We know Axiom very well for quite some time. They're also buying. What are they buying, Bob?
They're buying robot arm grapple points, or what they call interfaces, to put on the outside of their modules that they're building right now to attach to ISS and eventually become their own independent space station. So what they've done is they signed a contract with a company called MDA. It's a Canadian company that builds the Canadian robot arms that are on ISS. This is what they've done for years. The MDA was originally a political deal to give Canada the job of making the robot arms for the shuttle and later for ISS. But it's now become a company, an actual private company, and they've got the contract. And the contract they got from Axiom is to build a robot arm for Axiom yet, but it's a contract to put interfaces so that the robot arm on ISS can grapple their modules as they arrive. And probably what this means is a number of things. One, they can probably, rather than rendezvous and dock, they will rendezvous and then be berthed using the robot arm and these grappling attachments. But it also means down the road, Axiom is almost certainly going to buy its own robot arm from MDA when that station is finished and maybe independent from ISS, John. Just part of the growing private enterprise system that puts the government out of the equation entirely. It's not there. It's private enterprise and private companies and private people doing things in space.
The giant rock airplane, ROC, this is Stratolaunch. What is the rock look like, Bob?
Rock is, it was built by scavenging two 747 airplanes. And what it is it's got two fuselages connected with a midpoint connection. So it's like kind of similar to White Knight 2, the thing that Virgin Galactic's got. And the idea originally was going to be putting a rocket in the center of this dual fuselage giant airplane and put satellites into orbit. That didn't work. The company has now repurposed the plane, and it's now going to use it for allowing hypersonic test flights to create a convenient way to do in-flight testing of hypersonic technology. This has been a problem for the military. It's difficult to do hypersonic tests. It's very expensive to put the material together, and you get a very limited number of tests you can do, and so it doesn't work very well. So the military has been looking for some way to do more hypersonic tests, and so Stratolaunch has decided to repurpose Rock to do this, and they would put hypersonic vehicles below it to do the testing. And they're building two right now, and they have an Air Force contract to do research and hypersonic tests. And they're starting construction on a third vehicle that would be attached to Rock that is going to be reusable. Well, the story here is that Rock has completed its fifth flight, and this fifth flight, successful, debuted a new pylon under that center wing that connects the two fuselages, and this is where the Talon hypersonic vehicles would be attached. And they tested it, everything seemed to work, and so they're moving forward to potentially their first flights next year, John. And so this is good. It's more, you know, hypersonic tests would be very valuable on a number of reasons. One, it would provide engine capabilities for orbital flights. It's also military, rocket, you know, missiles that can fly hypersonic are very hard to stop.
Right. I was going to mention hypersonic technologies associated with weapon systems. I believe the talk is that is the Russians are using them in Ukraine. But what's striking here is a reusable hypersonic technology. Is this SpaceX influencing the Air Force?
No, this is SpaceX influencing Strato launch, but it's not to do, if this is not going to be reusable hypersonic weapons or reusable flights, the reusable vehicle will be a reusable vehicle to test hypersonic technology quickly. And so you can very quickly fly it, see what went wrong, reconfigure things, then fly it again. Kind of like they use the X-37B. And so that's what Strato launch is doing right now. And yes, down the road, you would have hypersonic rockets that could take advantage of that, or planes, and be reusable. This will definitely be applicable to those uses down the road.
South Korea, an ally of the United States, in the business. Is this commercial, Bob, a suborbital test flight? Yes.
Yes, this is a commercial company in South Korea. It's a small sat rocket company, kind of like Phantom Space. It's called InnoSpace. And they're now planning to do their first suborbital test flight this coming December, and they will launch a Brazilian military payload from that country's spaceport in Brazil. Brazil once back, I don't know, maybe almost three decades ago, had a space program. It built this spaceport. They did one test flight, and then they canceled the whole program. It's been sitting unused pretty much since then. The deal here is that InnoSpace will get the use of the spaceport in exchange for putting up a test payload for the Brazilian military. This company has raised $28 million so far in private investment capital. They're trying to make small sat rockets. They have a deal with a Norwegian company to launch from Norway. And so they're basically just trying to join this this new emerging small sat business and become a rocket launcher for them.
And the Russians, Roscosmos, which is in disrepair these days, an old Russian rocket, a Proton. What's happened, Bob?
The upper stage of a Proton rocket, when it launches, stays in orbit for a period of time until eventually the orbit decays and it returns to Earth. And this is pretty routine for almost all launches. The upper stage stays in orbit. Most companies nowadays will use the engine of the upper stage to try to control the return of the that upper stage, especially if the upper stage is large and pieces might hit the ground. They also try to do that so that it doesn't stay up there very long and break apart and become space junk. Well, what has happened here is that this upper stage engine, it's not the main engine of the upper stage, it's what they call an Ullage motor, solid rocket motor. It's used as part of operating the upper stage itself, not actually propelling it. It exploded. It broke up. It produced 16 pieces of new space junk. It was originally launched in 07, so it's an old launch. It's a long time ago. But it's not the first time this has happened. Apparently, there are about 64 of these motors up in orbit right now that have periodically gone bang and produced space junk. This is a problem that's been predictable and is well understood. It appears the Russians have never really done anything to try to deal with this as they use the Proton. The Proton rocket is pretty much a dead rocket anyway. Now, it doesn't have any commercial business, and Russia is moving to its Angara, so this is a problem will go away with time. But it's very clear, it indicates the Russians don't really care if they produce space junk, John. Never did.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. Or not. I'm John Batchelor.